Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 27-year talk radio host, and this is Haunted Playground. If it's spooky, scary, psychic, spiritual, lives beyond the boxes of the three dimensions, it belongs right here on Haunted Playground. We're here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network at liveparanormal.com. I'm at sheenametalspiritual.com, the show at hauntedplayground.com. Live Paranormal, of course, is syndicated all over the world, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Blog Talk Radio. I always forget like 10 of them, but someday I'll have them in front of me and I'll remember them all. A lot of places go. Happy to be part of the Live Paranormal family and the iHeartRadio family and all of these wonderful syndicators' families. Every week on the show, I pick out the brightest and most beautiful minds in the paranormal and spiritual community, and we talk about everything from am I an alien hybrid to is there a griffin in my backyard, to is my dog secretly chupacabra, to I married Bigfoot, to is there life after death. You name it, one of my favorite guests here that I love to have here, of course, the wonderful Andrea Perrin. She is a paranormal icon. I'm going to say that now. She's, you know, you don't think about your really good friends as being paranormal icons, but when I tell people that I know Andrea, some of them about poop themselves in the most paranormal of ways. She's a wonderful speaker and author and just amazing. And she just most recently appeared on my Raising the Vibration show just yesterday. So now she's here at Haunted Playground with me. Please visit us every Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific time for Haunted Playground and check out some of the other great shows here on the Live Paranormal Video Network. Excited to have Andrea back. She was the very first guest here when we relaunched Haunted Playground here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network, and I'm honored to have her here. Welcome, my friend. Always so good to hear your voice. It's like I just heard you 10 minutes ago.
I know. Isn't it amazing? Well, you know, there is where, honey, we're so connected, you know? I mean, you would never for a moment think there's 3,000 miles between us. You know, it's more like 3 millimeters and you're practically in the same room. And, you know, we got a great connection. And I'm not just talking Verizon. You know, we are, we're golden. I love you so much.
And Verizon ain't
myself.
I love you too, my friend.
I really don't think of myself as an icon, though. I really don't. I am just not celebrity material. That is not hardwired into my hard drive. Absolutely
not.
That's
why I like to say it, because you're so humble and you have so much humility, two of my favorite qualities in a person. And I like to bring it up because, you know, you really have. You've taken a, you know, oftentimes spirit tells my clients this important message. To think of yourself not as somebody that things happen to, but as somebody that things happen for. So here you, you know, grew up in a very scary haunted house, as I did, as a child, and here you've taken something that happened to you and made it something that happened for you, made something good out of it that other people can learn and benefit from and feel safety and have understanding and to sort of be a North Star to people who have had an encounter with the paranormal, whether it's ghosts or, you know, dark entities or off-worlders or whatever it is, you allow yourself to be somebody who sits and graciously listens to people and shares love and affection. And that, to me, makes you an icon.
Well, that's very sweet, honey, but that just makes me an Annie. that's really,
I agree.
True to myself in every conceivable way. I wouldn't know how to be anything other than myself. And it's, and it would be too much work. You know what I mean? I'm too lazy for that.
Yeah.
It's just so much easier to be me. Yeah.
But I am going to point out that you're a celebrity because I think you need to take stock in how much good work that you've done. So I'll tell you a little story. So a friend of mine who's a psychic pulled me into this sort of round table of people, entertainment people, psychics, all in the paranormal world, right? And I'm contributing, mm-hmm. I think, quite intelligently. But they're all kind of ignoring me because for whatever reason, these people don't know who I am and not everybody can know who you are, and that's okay. So then the topic of you comes up and they start talking about you and the house and the Conjuring, and they say, boy, I would give anything to meet her. And I just kind of chimed in and said, really? Because she's one of my best friends. And then suddenly I could play at the cool table because I knew Andrew's parents. And then it was like everything I said, they laughed or, oh, yeah, you're right. Like suddenly I became the most visible person in the room. And I think it's so strange that we do that, right? But I just want you to know that you're a big cheese in the paranormal world. So if you're ever having a bad day, just remember that. I'm a big cheese.
Yeah. It took me 10 years to become an overnight sensation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you got it now, baby. I think paranormal conferences help. I think the fact that you've made yourself very accessible to people, I think that helps. You do a lot of radio shows like this and a lot of different things where you're talking and sharing with people. And I think that helps. I mean, I know there are people in the para world who have had things happen to them in houses that were scary, or have had, you know, situations with off-worlders that were scary, who refuse to ever talk about it, won't talk to anybody. And okay, if that's how you feel, I get it, and I respect your privacy, and you have your right to that. But I just think that if you share, you're helping other people, you know? People sharing helped me get through my own PTSD from growing up in that house because other people shared. So it's just a matter of, you know, we're all here to help each other, right?
Yeah, we are. You know, I mean, really, it took me 7 years to write my trilogy of books, House of Darkness, House of Light. And I did it really more as a labor of love because I didn't know, to show respect and honor, you know, what my mother went through in that house more than anything.
Yes.
And I wanted to have it on the record. I wanted to chronicle the events, and my mother encouraged me to do that, but she gave me free rein to do it in the way that I wanted. She didn't hover over me and say, you know, I would like myself represented this way or that way. She's like, you just go for it. You know, you just tell this story
Beautiful. The
way you lived this story. And, you know, after she read it, she said, you know, I know I'm your mom, but I'm sorry, honey. This is a masterpiece. This is just, oh, my God, you wrote this. You know, and I always have deeply appreciated that because she's my North Star. Mother is my hero. My mother is the person most worthy of emulation in my life. She is my teacher and she is my guide and she's my whole world. She's my whole universe. She's the center of my universe. And so it's, you know, to have her react to what I did and how emotionally I told the story and how spiritually centered the story was. You know, you've read it. It's not a horror story. It's a love story with a wicked supernatural twist. It's not a horror story. You know, it bears absolutely no resemblance to the Conjuring at all. And, you know, when the people who made The Conjuring read my books, they were like, oh, hell no. uh-uh, you know, this is way too intense. We're not putting this in. We're not putting that in because, you know, what's the point of making a movie? Nobody even stays to watch till the end. And meanwhile, I'm thinking, you know, did they read the same books that I wrote? Because I didn't really think of it at all as horrific. I thought of it more as, you know, I mean, I'm not saying there were never times that there was never a time I was not scared in that house. I didn't even just say that right, and that's proof of how tired I am. I'm not saying I was never scared in the house. I was.
Right.
But I wasn't scared for me. I was scared for other members of my family who were enduring some terrible things and some truly frightening things that I witnessed.
Right.
But I was never the subject of. I was always treated as respectfully by the entities in that house as I treated them. And I don't know why I was never targeted in that way, even though I had a multitude of experiences. But there was never anything that I was frightened or terrified by. I was more curious and fascinated, and I spoke with them the same way I would speak with my own sisters, or, you know, I just communicated with them. I don't think I lived very much in 3D. I think I lived more in 4D when I was there with them. I lived as much in their realm as I lived in my own. But I, at that age, was not able to distinguish that that was happening. And when things got unruly in that house, I would put my foot down and say, no, no, stop, stop it. And it would stop. And when things got really hairy, all I ever had to do, which is where my personal faith comes from, all I ever had to do is say, God help us. Just and request divine intervention, and it was done. It was over. No matter what it was, no matter how bad it was over with the invocation of the word God. And so that's where my faith does not come from sitting in a pew in a Catholic church, which we kind of got unsurreptitiously thrown out of the second year that we lived at the farm. But it was from a faith that I think I brought to the house and that I exercised in the house. And so to me, that was the power that I needed. You know, people are afraid of what they don't understand. And what I do understand about spirits, ghosts, entities, you know, different types of manifested energy, which is really what it is that we're stronger than they are because we're actually of the earth. And we're living on the earth right now. And they are earthbound in some way, but in a different realm. And so we're in the power seat. And as we've discussed many times, our superpower as mortals, as mortal souls, is love. And so even when they misbehaved, even when I was angry with them, my love for them, my reverence and respect for the dead superseded that. And I would try to talk them down and say, you know, what are you doing this for? Are you doing this for attention? Okay, you've got my attention. You want to be acknowledged? Fine, you're acknowledged. What is it? Why? Stop scaring my little sister. Stop it. There's no need for this. And over the course of time, of the 10 years that we lived at the farm, we did make peace with the spirits to the extent that they loved us, that they didn't want us to leave. I mean, they actually made it difficult for us to sell the farm. My mother had to ask permission for us to leave the farm. My father had to go to the abutting landowner and cut him the deal of the century to take that place off our hands so that we could relocate as a family to Georgia and make a fresh start in 1980. And my mother just sat in the bathroom one day and said, just let us go. Just please let us go. Let this be over now. I won't survive another winter in this house. I can't handle this anymore. It has worn me down. I need to go. And, you know, finally, after the house being on the market for 6 months and not a single call coming in to even look at it, one of the original colonial homes in America, you know, with all this land and, you know, this beautiful water and this gorgeous barn and this, you know, all, not a single phone call, not one. You know, and to say that it was priced right is ridiculous understatement. You know, my family wasn't trying to get rich off the farm. They were trying to just get gone. And, you know, meanwhile, I'm struggling through my final semester of college with a tutorial, which is the exact same thing as a senior thesis, and working my ass off 18 hours a day. And the farm is being sold out from underneath me, and nobody bothered to tell me. I was devastated, Sheena. I was devastated. I thought I was going to live my whole entire life in that house. I did. That was my anticipation. And when my parents called me.
Isn't that funny how that was your dream? Yeah.
That's the only place
that
feels like home. Yeah.
Right, and that was my fear that I would get stuck in that house forever.
But, you know, we had come to terms of endearment. At least I had. I certainly had. You know, and when my mother explained to me that it was the farm or it was her life, and she really, truly believed that, then the decision was made. And she asked me if I would please, you know, come to Georgia and be with the family. Nancy was so angry that she wouldn't go. Nancy stayed behind as the caretaker of the house while the new owners started working on it, you know, to restore it. And she stayed there for I don't even remember how long. I mean, it fractured our family to sell that house. It did. Half of us never wanted to leave, and half of us never wanted to go back or even look back. It was, I mean, the dynamics, the psychological dynamics around our story are probably the most fascinating element of the entire story.
Yeah, and I think it's very common. When I lived in that house, my family was at each other's throats the entire time. But I think, you know, I counsel folks who are recovering from narcissistic relationships, and I find that when you're with a narcissist, right, it's not really love, it's really an addiction. And with addiction, there's two places, right? Somebody who's with a narcissist is either being showered with love and seeing only the good or seeing only the bad. And I think it's that way in haunted houses that are questionably negative or very negative, that there are people like my father loved that house. He didn't want to ever leave that house because that house was telling him everything he ever wanted to hear. He was a hateful, spiteful person to us. But he was in love with that house. And he probably would have stayed there forever, and it would have kept whispering nastiness in his ear. But, you know, it just depends. Either you're getting the beautifulness of it or you're getting the bad. And it just completely depends on who you are and where you're at and how the house resonates with your individual spiritual resonance, right? Everybody reacts differently. Somebody's favorite song is somebody else's least favorite song.
Yeah. Yep, that's true. You know, I just always felt like it was home for me. It's the only place that has ever felt like home to me. And, you know, I've lived in a lot of different places, different states. You know, I'm down in Florida now. I've lived in Georgia. I've lived in Pennsylvania. I've lived in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut. You know, I mean, I've spent time all over this country in, you know, many different states. You know, and part of me feels like wherever my 2 feet happen to be at any given moment, you know, then that's home, because it's all, you know, home is, excuse me, home is earth for now, which I, you know, am really glad is not a permanent state of being, because as I said to you quite recently, I perceive Earth to be soul school, and sometimes I want to get off campus because, you know, I mean, it really sucks because it's the test always precedes the lesson, and it's just, it's so unfair, and it can be so ugly, and it can be so oppressive, and yet, I mean, could we have asked for a more beautiful planet that we mistreat terribly?
I know,
you know, it's like, oh my God, talk about enabling, you know, humanity with, you know, our ball of rock hurtling through space that really couldn't be more beautiful. It couldn't. I mean, there are so many places on this planet that are still untouched by human hands, still unspoiled. You know, we haven't explored the depths of our oceans, and yet we pollute them from the surface. You know, we try to make our air unbreathable. We make our water toxic. We, you know, we drill for oil and just let it kind of gush out wherever it happens to gush and not deal with that. I mean, it's just, I don't know. Sometimes it feels so overwhelming, like, you know, how can we heal if we don't even recognize the disease? You know, how do you heal from something that you won't even acknowledge is a disease? And what that creates in me is dis-ease. You know, the root of that word, dis-ease. You know, that's what that creates in me. And I suffer a lot from the angst of it and the frustration and the anger about it, because... You know, I said once to my friend Paula Harris, who, you know, is a big-time investigative journalist, and she runs the StarWorks Symposium out in Nevada, and she's just a brilliant, brilliant woman. And I called her one time recently, last couple of months or so, and I called her, and I was just in a really pissy mood. And I said, you know what, Paula, I think I'm just screaming into wind that is hurricane force, that every word I say is just lost. It's just lost, like nobody hears it. And she got really quiet, and she said, they hear you. And she just, I was on Zoom with her, and she just pointed up. She just pointed up, they hear you. They know what you're doing. You know, is that enough to carry me? Is that enough to carry me? I guess it has to be. It has to be.
Yeah.
You know, because I can't stop doing what I'm doing. I can't stop doing what I'm doing. I was doing what I've been doing my whole life, well before anybody knew my name, before anybody associated me with the paranormal or a feature film or, you know, this person that travels around and, you know, introduces folks to the galactic family or, you know, speaks with spirit or, you know, before anybody knew anything about me in this particular genre, I was doing exactly what I'm doing right now. But there was nobody listening. And many times I still feel like there's nobody listening. And I know that's not the case. I know how many people have said that the lessons that I have imparted, the messages that I have imparted have made a difference in their lives, have lifted them up, have, you know, raised their consciousness, their awareness. They feel more enlightened. They feel like they're actually learning something by paying attention to what I'm telling them. I know it makes a difference, but, you know, there's more than 7 billion of us on this planet. And, you know, I maybe a couple of million people have heard my message, maybe a couple of million. And I know your opinion about this. I know you feel like every single person, it makes a difference, that it's a cumulative effect. I understand. I know what you're going to say before you say it. I know what you're going to say.
It. It
but
does.
Sometimes it does, but sometimes like it feels too little, too late.
Yeah, I know. I know, and I understand, but it's not. It's never too late for us to save everything. Never too late for us to save the world. It ain't over till it's over, baby.
Yeah, I know.
That's just my optimistic Aries, you know, life path 11. Everything in my chart.
I know.
Like, optimistic.
Do you feel me hugging you from 3,000 miles away?
I do. Yes, I do. Uh-huh. I'm glad I can help. You know, you have to keep believing even when it's hard, and I understand how hard it is because I think sometimes people think because I'm so chipper, it means I don't understand how hard life is. I mean, life has kicked me in the crotch too many times to mention. I understand what life is like. And, you know, we all have lessons, and they're hard. You know, I have a Taurus Venus, which is all about family and lifelong friendships and lifelong partnering. So I oftentimes get involved with people who betray me. That's my Saturn. Taurus and Saturn is all about learning about people. And I get betrayed a lot because I just think it's easy. I think people think they can just do what they want and I'll just keep coming back. You know? So
yeah.
I think when you're me and you're always there for everybody, I think a lot of people take advantage of you because
take you for granted. Yep.
Right, because they're chasing after their other friends who don't give two shits about them.
You know
what I mean? I mean, this world is not set up for nice people, and it certainly is not set up for empaths.
And yet that's what this world needs more of. People that are actually capable
of
putting themselves into the shoes of others and feeling their pain.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And there are lots of us, but most of us are getting trod on by people. You know what I mean? It's hard, and it's hard for all of us. Some days I get up and I'm like, ugh. But you have to keep going, and you have to keep going, and you have to keep being happy. And, you know, somebody said to me the other day, I can't do anything when my life. I'm in pain. And I laugh, and I didn't mean to laugh at someone's pain, but I've been in pain with one medical condition or another since I was 18 months old. And so I don't know what I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
To go to our sports clinic and get the athletic surgery and be pain-free. I mean, is pain-free really a thing? I don't even know if that's really a thing, but it certainly is not for me.
Well, my favorite meme is, my favorite Facebook meme is, if I woke up and had no pain, I'd think I was dead, you know, and
I did die.
You know, I mean,
I had
something always hurts.
And that was the first thing I noticed. Yes.
Yep.
My whole life.
Pain-free.
And that, when I had my near-death experience when I was 23, the first thing I thought was, oh my God, there's no pain there. And it was shocking to me, and I didn't even realize how much pain I was in at that time at 23 until the pain was gone. But I don't let that stop me. I still live my life, and I get up every day, and I just do my thing. And sometimes I don't feel like doing that, but I do it. And
true for me. I get up every day. Coffee gets my ass out of bed, and peanut needs to pee. And, you know, if I can't for a moment, from the moment I open my eyes, the first thought is she might be uncomfortable. And so I get up and I take her out and let her relieve herself. And then she's all frisky and happy. And, oh, my God. And Grandpa's up and he made a pot of coffee. And, oh, my God. And it's a brand new day. And, you know, I can look at the – I mean, she's like a child. She's like a little child. I see the wonder in her eyes when she sees a new bug that she has never seen before. Or the day there was a baby alligator in our front lawn because we live on Lake Apopka, and there was a baby alligator in our front lawn. And she was like, oh, my God, look at this. You know, I mean, look at this. You know, and I'm like, don't get too close to it, forgetting that they don't have teeth yet. You know, and it was fine. But all I could say was, oh, my God, it's going to bite her nose off. Oh, my God, Peanut, get away from it. You know, I remember the first time I saw my Great Pyrenees, Gracie Pearl, see a herd of deer come through my mother's yard. She lives in a rural area of western Georgia, west of Atlanta. And, you know, like this 8-point buck and a doe and a fawn came into the yard and just walked across. They've got a couple of acres there, and just walked across into the back field up near the church behind the house. And she turned her head and looked at me with, like, her eyes said everything. Like, did you see this? Do you see this? You know, and I beamed with joy at seeing her excitement and the wonder of it all, because she had never seen deer. And what an incredible experience. And I got to share that through her. And, you know, I'm really very much of an animal intuitive. I've always been able to talk with animals and communicate with animals my whole life, as far back as I can remember. And I have this great affection for them. And I think it's because of the unconditional love. I think it's because they are what we should emulate. And I think that's the attachment. And plus, they're just so freaking cute. And when I see that, it's almost like me having the experience for the first time myself. Do you know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean. I feel the same way about my 5-month-old kitten, Cullen. Everything in the world is amazing because Cullen is alive, you know?
Yep. Oh, I hear that, baby. I hear that, baby.
That's my Cullen. Well, that's my almost 8-year-old, Molly.
Oh, Molly. Hello, sweetheart.
Is
a sweet
years.
Baby. You know, one
She's
of the things
nearly.
That I'm happy of,
I'm sorry?
I hear the baby. One of the things that I'm most encouraged about in terms of the paranormal, with how many animals that I saw, animal spirits that we saw at the farm, not just in the barn, but in the house. And to me, not only the notion that we go on in some way, shape, or form, you know, that there is something beyond our mortal existence, but that they go on as well. And I don't think that it was just a matter of residual energy. I've had too many of my animals that have passed, you know, generally from old age, that visit me and make their presence known to me specifically right after they have passed, you know, specifically to let me know that they're still with me. And whether it's, you know, Elliot's particular meow that was so distinctive, or, you know, hearing my mother's little dog Coco pitter-pattering across the kitchen floor the day after she had died in my arms. She had a massive heart attack and she died in my arms. And my mother cried for 3 months. My mother didn't cry when her sister died, or when her brother died, or when her brother-in-law died, or, you know, I mean, my mother just is not, my mother is a very stoic Virgo. And when Coco died, she was absolutely inconsolable for months. So I think I get that animal connection from her.
Absolutely.
And the greatest gift was hearing the pitter-patter of Coco's little feet on the kitchen floor. That was the greatest gift, knowing that she's still with us.
Yes, Yeah. Well, I tell you.
It's pouring again. It just started.
I had a cat. My very first cat's name was Erin. Because, you know, when you're Irish, you name your first cat Erin Dobrough. And
of course.
She had been very badly abused. She showed up in my garage one night, wouldn't leave. I've never had a cat. The funniest thing, her first couple of weeks with me and my mom coming up to visit me, I had just bought my first house. She had, neither one of us had any idea how to take care of a cat. We'd never had a cat. We were like, does she know how to go in the litter box? Why do her eyes do that thing? Like, we were ridiculous. But Erin loved me and loved my mom, loved my ex-boyfriend, Paul, whom I met not too soon after acquiring her. And then I got other cats to keep her company, and she proceeded to hate them all and, you know, lived in a closet the rest of her life. When she got sick, I told her, if you want to come back and do this again and you want me to be your mommy, you let me know and I'll give it another try. And she was the first one to pass. I couldn't sleep. I'd never lost an animal like that before that was actually mine. I don't think I slept for a week. She would hover over my shoulder like she was sitting over my right shoulder, and she died on Thanksgiving. Because I said to her, please don't die on a holiday, because that's a tradition in my family. So, of course, she died on Thanksgiving. And I was laying there. I had to work that day. I had a show I was booking. I had to go to the Laugh Factory because I was one of the regular comics there and feed the homeless. And I just wanted to die. I hadn't slept. She died at like 5 o'clock in the morning. And I had one of those, you know when your toilet does that thing where it automatically flushes? And they'd been doing it for months. And I said, Erin,
yeah.
Can you please just stop making the toilet flush? And that toilet never did that again. So anyway, I was so devastated by her death. Now, at that time, I still had Megan. I had Seamus. I had Liam. And I had a Pomeranian that I acquired from my ex. But I couldn't even think. I thought, I'll never get another cat. I'll never be over her. And then about 2 months after she, 18 months after she died, I started thinking about her. And I started thinking about the idea of getting another cat. And I started thinking about, I just started thinking about it. And then I was at my mom's house, and I opened a drawer where my mom kept sweaters. And there was a picture of Erin in there. And I said, Mom, why is there a picture of Erin in your sweater drawer? And she said, there's not a picture of Erin in my sweater drawer. And I handed it to her, and she said, I have no idea. I've never seen that before in my life. And then about a week after that, I was at a street fair in the valley where I live, and I was looking at the stained glass booth because I love stained glass, and they had a little blue cat head that looked just like Erin, and it was just staring at me. So I got it, and I said to Spirit, you know what? Maybe I'm ready to get another one. Maybe the time has come. So about a week after that, I was at a Petco because my friend was looking at guinea pigs. And I went to go look at the fish section because I thought maybe my little boy, Liam, he had a lot of ADD issues. I thought maybe I was going to get him a fish tank. Well, they pulled the fish out that day, and it was cat adoption day. And there, laying in a cage, swinging face down in a hammock, looking like she just wished God would come and take her home, was Molly. 5 months old, the spitting image of Erin. And they tried to talk me out of her. Because they said she was trouble, and other people had brought her back. But here's the kicker. You ready for the kicker? Because I know you like the kicker, Annie.
I always
said, well, if I got another cat, if it was a boy, it was going to be Nikki, and if it was a girl, it was going to be Molly. So they're struggling her out of the cage, and she's hanging on with her claws, and the little guy that fostered her says, oh, come on, don't fight me, Molly. She was already Molly. And I will tell you with 100% certainty that this girl is Erin. She is Erin. And as I didn't get Erin until she was a year old, so I didn't know what she looked like at 5 months. As she has grown up, she has Erin's mannerisms. She has Erin, the way Erin talks. She is Erin, come back. And it happens. You know, they'll come back to be with you again.
Yes.
And this little one, so people who don't believe, you know, in reincarnation, and people who don't believe that animals have souls, and people that don't believe that are the familials that come back are not just our ancestors that are human, it's also the animals that we have lived with and loved, right?
Yes, it is. And I have my peanut, my princess peanut butter cup right here, who just loves. We sit at night, every single night. We lay in bed together, and she chews on some little nub of some little bone that she has, you know, just completely chewed to smithereens. And I give her a full body rub, just head to toe, her rub her little toenails and stroke her neck and do the belly rub. And when she's had enough of the belly, then I do her back, literally from her tip of her nose to the tip of her tail. And it is the most therapeutic. I mean, not only is it really good for her and makes her, you know, absolutely blissfully happy, but it's so good for me. And I hope that she's the reincarnation of Gracie Pearl, even though she's like the size of Pearl's nose. I mean, Pearl was huge. She was a 130-pound lap dog, and Peanut's 10 pounds. But she's just as willful, just as belligerent, just as know-it-all, just as intelligent, just as, you know, frisky, just as impetuous. I mean, she's got, you know, many of the same qualities that Gracie Pearl has. But I don't know. But, you know, the other thing, too, is I kind of hope it's not Pearl, because when I get wherever I'm going, there had better be a big-ass farm. And I want all my animals. I have been rescuing animals my whole life, since I was a little child. And I want all of them to be there. And nobody to fight with each other, because like Henry was really weird about food, and he could be a handful. And, you know, Emily was way too submissive and easily scared by other animals. My black lab, who I had for 15 years, you know, I mean, I want them to be their own individual characters. But, you know, if Gracie Pearl wants to leap into my little princess peanut buttercup from time to time and get some lovies like how we used to be with each other, that's fine too. I don't care how it works. I know that it is. I know that there's something supernatural about the love, the incredible love that I feel for my critters, that it makes life worth living, literally makes life worth living. I know, it's my baby. He's my baby.
Absolutely.
Oh, she's so cute. I wish you could see her face right now. I'll send you a picture. I took a picture of her lounging today out on the terrace on one of the pretty benches, and the sunlight was very muted, and she was just copping some rays and just, you know, being all the most beautiful upside-down dog, and just kind of letting it all hang out. So it's not a picture I'm going to put out publicly, but I'll definitely send it to you.
I'll send you
She's something.
Cullen that I did. While we did Raising the Vibration, I took some pictures of Cullen. Cullen is my my savior. COVID made me very good, and he has saved me.
Yeah. Well, isn't that what they do? Isn't that what they do? I know I got Peanut on January 15th, and I rescued her off the road in front of my mother's house. And the moment that I saw her on the road, which is a very busy road, that 15 years ago was a dirt road, and now you'd think it was Daytona International Speedway. And I saw her, and my mom saw her at the same time when I was up in Georgia over the 2019 into the 2020 holiday, the Christmas and New Year's. Then I stayed with her for about 5 weeks. And when I saw this little dog, she was emaciated. She was terrified. She was freezing. She was starving. And she was injured. And when I saw her darting back and forth between cars that were doing three times the speed limit, my first words that I spoke aloud were, "Dear God, please let her death be quick and painless, because there was no question in my mind that she was going to die. And then I suddenly remembered that my sister had died. And I said, April, bring the little dog to me. April, go rescue the dog. Be the dog's guardian angel and go get that little dog and bring her to this house. Do it. Do it. And it took me 2.5 days to lure her in with food and with soft fleece blankets and building her, you know, a nice warm place on the carport that she could huddle up, because it was freezing. It was freezing cold. It was in the teens and 20s at night. You know, it was just, Georgia gets bitchin' cold, and especially North Georgia. And it took me 2.5 days, and I warmed up. I saw her huddling on the back porch. I couldn't believe she had come so close to the back door of the house, and she was up on the stairs to this little, like, sitting porch that's off the back of the house, off the kitchen. And she was just trying to get some sunshine on her to warm up, and her whole body was trembling, and you could see every bone in her body. She was just emaciated. And I had made ribeye steak for my mother and my sister the night before, and there was one piece left. And I went to the kitchen, pulled it out of the refrigerator, diced it into tiny little bite-sized pieces, threw it in the microwave for 30 seconds so that it was completely aromatic and the juices began to flow. And I took it and I sat out on the back porch. And as soon as she saw me open the door, she ran like hell. And then she came back up the stairs, and I put a little tiny piece of steak down on the porch. And she ran over and she got it, and then she ran away. And the second one, she came down, she got it, and she ran away. The third one, she took from my fingertips and then put her forehead against my leg, and I had her. I threw my hands around this little dog like vice grips, and I walked into the house, and my sister Christine turned and looked at me, and she said, I cannot believe you caught that effing dog. And that was it. That was it. I mean, the bond was instantaneous. She was all over me. She was so grateful. I mean, it was just pure, unadulterated, like being steeped in drawn butter love, like immersed in the warmest feeling that you have ever felt. And I just held her, and it took me, well, God, I don't know. I took her immediately to the vet to check and make sure. She had no tags, no collar, no chip, no nothing. Christine and I put the word out at every vet, at the shelter, because the last thing in the world that I would want to do is take a dog who maybe had a house full of kids that were sobbing because their little dog got out of their backyard and they missed her and they loved her and she got lost and, you know, had gotten injured. And when I took her to the vet said, I'm pretty sure this dog is an escapee from a puppy mill. She's not even a year old yet. She was apparently force-bred and has already weaned a litter of puppies. And she's not even close to a year yet. She's like, you need to keep this dog. And I said, well, you know, as long as she doesn't belong to somebody else. And she said, I'm telling you, this is a puppy mill dog. And I, you know, came to understand that when I realized how terrified she was of anything that even resembled a cage, and how absolutely mortified she was by a water hose. And, you know, that's how they clean out the cages.
Oh, yeah.
They just hit them with high-powered water hoses with the dogs in them. And, you know, so believe me, she will never, ever be in a cage again. When I water the plants, I close off the front door so she can't even hear it or see it, so that she, you know, never has to revisit any of that terror. And she is the happiest, happiest little dog on the planet. And right now she knows I'm talking about her. She's acting like a fool. And she's a spirit dog. She's a spirit dog. I can't even, I mean, it was like the universe said, here, you need this. And, you know, 10 days later, I'm sitting reading an article in the Washington Post about this new emerging coronavirus, a novel virus that no one has any immunity to, and everyone who it touches are dropping like flies. And I just sat back in my chair and I looked at her and I said, oh my God, this is it. This is the paradigm shift. This is it. And I was right.
Yeah.
This isn't, you know, when people say to me all the time, and I'm sure you get the same question, what the hell is a paradigm shift? Well,
the easiest way. Right now, I'm going to let you do it. Yes.
Well, it's, you know, in the simplest terms, it is an event. It's the culmination of many events, but generally stemming from a singular event that literally alters human consciousness. It is that moment in human evolution where nothing's ever going to be the same again. You know, it's the before and the after. It's like Jesus Christ was a paradigm shift in humanity. And, you know, on the face of the earth, the forthcoming Messiah, as he is known by, you know, billions of people. And even though we killed him, you know, because he was way too good for this place.
Right.
You know, capital W, capital E, we humanity killed him because his message was too pure. And his teachings were too kind, and he lived in opposition to the power structure of the time. And so he paid with his life. But he left an imprint on humanity, and his teachings and his message has carried forth for far more than 2,000 years. And it was, why we have BC and AD. You know, it literally shifted our perception of time because of the event, the traumatic event of his death. And this is the next paradigm shift. This is that virus that everyone is susceptible to, that no one has any immunity to, and it is this moment in time where all of us have to confront our mortality.
Mm-hmm.
And so this seems to me to be the perfect time for us to discuss the paranormal, the whole notion that there is an afterlife.
Yes. Right, and with this paradigm shift, right, is coming the thinning of the veil between the worlds, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Well, I don't even think that there is a veil. I think that's a self-imposed machination. You know, it's something that we've created because I think that we're all surrounded by spirit all the time. But now people are more and more and more experiencing it, more in touch with it, more in touch. And it's not just a matter of their home so much that suddenly they think their house is haunted, or that they're outside in the park so much trying to avoid other people that they're seeing things in the sky. You know, what's actually happening is that we're seeing our old reality with new eyes. The reality hasn't changed. Our perception of it has. And has actually become enriched and has become just expanded with our consciousness around this period of time. This has affected everyone. Everyone has been affected by this on this planet. And a lot of people have been affected by the loss of those they love the most and being fractured and torn apart. And that's how seeds grow, because seeds are planted in the dark, deep, rich, moist earth, and eventually they rupture, and then they begin to sprout and feel the sunshine on their little tiny leaves, and they come to life above the surface of the earth. And as the great poet Leonard Cohen wrote, there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in.
It's true. It's true, my friend. And on that beautiful note, we are out of time. I love you. Where can people find you online?
I'm everywhere. Just Google my name. There I am.
Come back and do
it's
this
easy.
Again soon. I would love it.
I love you dearly.
I love you, my friend. Everything's going to be okay. And remember that, right? Remember the John Lennon quote, right? Everything will be all right in the end. If it's not all right, it's not the end.
Not the end.
Okay? And keep that in mind. Yeah. All right? It's not the end, my friend. And just remember that you have many people in your life that love you. You're not alone in this world. You're lucky to have tribe. As am I, and everything's going to be okay, all right? That was your therapy for the week. I feel like every time I have you on the show, it's like your therapy. The wonderful and fantastic Andrea Perrin. If you're interested in finding her, links to her, anything to do with me, SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. That's how you can find me, SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. You can also find me at HauntedPlayground.com and at LiveParanormal.com. We are syndicated all over the world, including on the amazing iHeartRadio. I'll be live on Live Paranormal's video channel tonight doing my Haunted Playground After Dark. It's at facebook.com/TheLiveParanormal. Also, please follow me on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and more at Sheena Metal. Till I see you next time, seek peace. Live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, always raise that vibration, keep believing in all things in this world and beyond. I love you all. See you next week. Everyone, stay at 6 o'clock. We're here. Please join us.